Well, my pleasure to be with everybody once again. Just as a kind of continuation of some of what Hans was talking about, this is a file which is called by another TypeScript file in order to get the features in the font. So this is called Husseini Default. So I've defined, actually I checked, it's actually SS54. So I'm up to SS54, although the OpenType standard only goes up to SS20. I've written John Hudson, who developed this particular spec, and asked him if he can take it, just take it up to 99 and be done with it.
Why is it numeric anyway? It's got to be the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
Well, that I don't know, but. However, the latest OpenType standard now allows for word descriptions of these kinds of feature sets. So the next versions of FontForge and Volt, you should be able to carry. So instead, like you see here, where I have a description, I should be able to put that into Volt or into FontForge itself. And then maybe there might be a way in context where I can just do bracket, give the description, and then it will know what it is, because it's very hard to remember. I can never remember any of these.
Nobody can.
But as you can see, and I'm going to have to do this one more time because I can't see my own screen yet, so let's see if I can get my screen back and get that at the same time. No. Is it coming? All right, there we go. All right, now I can, so here, and so this gives you a number of features, and this is our Arabic font codename Husseini, and you can see the features go on and on and on, but most of them are commented, because you don't want to cut all of them on all the time. So the challenge is to find a reasonable default. So after putting all these together, I came up with a set which I figured is not first order. It doesn't cut on every advanced feature. But it gets a good medium for your good document. And it somewhat approaches the Bullock style that we discussed before. So now if we just go straight to Adobe, Hans wasn't too pleased with the outline that I did this morning with the white background and just the titles. So I decided to put a nice little arabesque border around this one so that it, at least you capture some of the feel of the thing. Now, here what we know, you saw that big file, and not big file, you saw that file with all the different features. Now, if I want to go to first order, we define a font feature, just as in the Husseini default file, first order. And at least the way it is now, what I did was each feature that I don't use, I subtract it, okay? And then we get this sub FF first order. This is a little bit old. You see, this only goes up to 43. If I want to update it, I got to take it up to 54, so there's a lot more to add and subtract. But these are features I don't use, and so I'm subtracting them out. And what this does, this subtracts them from the original defined font feature, which was defined in Husseini default. So it just subtracts those, which gives us a first order effect. And with the tracing on, we can enlarge this a bit.
Idris?
Yes.
Just to be clear, Husseini is the name of your own font. Right?
That's the code name. The final name probably will not be Husseini, but that's the code name that we're using for now.
Okay.
And what you see here is not too different from what you would get from, let's say, linotype or linotype lotus, for example. This isn't too different. A few of the characters are different. For example, this calf here, which overshoots the aleph, gives you a little bit of aesthetic that you wouldn't get in a normal first order font. So there are some minor differences. But for the most part, this is average. Are the colors clear or are they alienated? Because I can switch to non-color mode.
I think they're awesome, but could you say again what they mean?
You really want me to get into that? This is a...
Let me ask a simpler question about color. Is the color important to the meaning of the text?
Oh, not at all. This is for fun. However, not only for fun, but also for tracking. You'll notice I and IT are all in red. MEDI are all in green. FI and A are all in yellow. And then for isolated, I'm sorry, blue. And then for isolated, we have yellow. And then we have a couple of other features as well. And when Aditya was doing his, he also enabled the trackers and showed some of the color. So I'm using the same feature that Aditya was using. So except here, we have applied it to some of these Arabic script features. I'm happy to share with you what this means, but it would probably take time away from this. So like maybe after the session.
It looks cool, yeah. I'd like to understand.
It's a mystical treatise, by the way.
Okay.
A short mystical treatise written by Al-Hasan ibn Ali al-Askari in the year 4 and 5 and 200, which basically means 254 after the Hijra date. Now, if we go to the next one, this is what I call monotype Nasq style. So here we've basically imitated the distillation of Bulaq done by monotype Nasq. And now you can take a look at what that looks like. If we go back here for one moment, and I'm trying to see what's a good example for this. I believe here, Aleph Lam Ha, if you look at that, and then in monotype Nasq, yes. In monotype Nasq, you see the lam is on top of the ha. And in our Arabic lesson earlier in the day, we used exactly that example. So monotype Nasq has that particular feature. It has another one. Here's meme stacked on top of meme. And there are a few more. This is a nice one where lam comes over the ta, over the meme, and then back up. And here's something that I've added to monotype Nasq, the monotype Nasq style, which as far as I know, I'm not aware of any Arabic font that does this, but here I do the two dots vertically instead of horizontally, which in a tight space is what's traditionally done, but you rarely see that. So these two dots here are the same as these two dots here, but because the space here is tight, you make it vertical as opposed to horizontal. And here's calf over meme and so forth. Feel free to slow me down or stop me as I move on, because I want to try to get through most of these. So largely what I'm doing is showing you various samples of what can be done. Here's my default. So there's no code to look at. This just applies that file that I showed you at the beginning without any modifications whatsoever. So here, of course, you'll notice the first line, we use a little bit of stretching. This is Bismillah Rahman Rahim, which is the first line used both in the Quran and in many Arabic books as well. Now, here are some interesting things that happen, and I'm going to have to probably really close in on a couple. Here's an interesting one. There are a lot of subtleties here which may not be clear at the beginning. This gene that goes into the lung is not your usual, is not the usual one. This one connects into it. Of course, if you don't know Arabic, it might not be completely clear, but we can go back to the first order style and show that same word. And if you memorize what I just showed you before, you can see this is different. Okay, that's the default first order style. But, and here you can see the second order style. So you start getting lots of little subtleties. Here's a nice one. Okay? The first, normally this is stretched out more in a normal Arabic font, but according to calligraphic tradition, this should be a little tighter, which we do here and here. And you also see it's not perfectly horizontal. There's a slight verticalness here. Now, Arabic typesetting, which comes with Microsoft Windows, has a there's a font there which implements a kind of slant, but it's very naive because it applies this slant to all the letters, and that's really not correct. It should only be applied to the first couple of letters so that it kind of comes in and becomes flat. And that's what we've implemented here using, now, open source is sacrosanct. However, there's nothing better than Microsoft Vault for doing this kind of work, unfortunately. I tried doing it in FontForge. I got certain ways in, but then every time I would use a feature that nobody else was using, FontForge would predictably crash. So I would send the note to the list, and then George would write back, well, nobody's used that feature before, and then he'll fix it and say, well, now you have to apply this patch, and I don't know what to do with these patches. And I mean, I would have to hire a graduate student or somebody just to compile the fixes to FontForge. But the people, Sergey Malkin and the others who worked on Vault, I have to admit, they did a very terrific job of distilling enough features of OpenType to really get one moving efficiently on font development. And as much as we like to bash Microsoft, I couldn't have gotten as far as I've gotten without using Microsoft Vault. And at least it's free, as in beer, as you beer lovers like to like to say. But now let's move on and go look at some gene stacking. So here we're adding a bit more, and I'll keep it in normal mode for now. And because we don't have time, I mean, there are a lot of features here. I don't have time to show all of them, but here's one that I'm especially happy with. In classical Arabic, normally this is a geme-shaped letter. It is a geme. And you see it doesn't come in flat. It comes in above, and then it comes down, almost like a zigzag. And Arab type does this to a certain degree. Arab tech has a certain limited ability to do this. But in this font, we have, I believe, fully implemented a model for stacking, not only on top of geme, but on top of a couple of other letters as well. Now, I want you to look at this. This is called the letter fa. And also look here. The system knows the rules that makes this ba shape taller than this one. But these are actually the same. They represent the same glyph shape. But this one comes first, it goes higher, then the second one goes lower. Now keep an eye on that for one moment. And here's another one, and actually this is a very good example of another important feature. This is masabih. It means lanterns. And you see the dot which is red. This dot goes with the initial letter ba here. Normally, this dot would go right here. But if it did, it would clash with the jim shape. So what we did is we made a contextual lookup that says in this situation, move that dot. So if this letter is followed by this letter and then this letter, then move that dot so it doesn't clash. It sounds pretty simple, but it's
For how many letters do you look at that?
For this one?
No, yeah, in general. This one is for the first one, but in principle, maximum. How many letters is you look at in that book?
I don't think there is a maximum. At least I'm not aware of it. But in practice, it won't be more than one or two. In practice, I've never had to use more than one or two. I think I've done three a couple of times. But usually only one or two.
I'm sure the limit used to be 255, but it has been raised to
555. I want to show you another example of the same letter in a different position. Since I redid this, it's a little bit. Here's another good one to look at. Here we go. If you look here, you see this is the exact same glyph. And here you see the dot is much closer. Okay? So, and of course here, because this glyph is thin, I use the vertical two dots instead of the horizontal two dots in order to get a tight feel there. And here's another neat trick which you will not find which you'll find very few Arabic fonts. Probably only Decotype by Thomas Milo does something similar, although I haven't seen it. But in any case, here we have two letters coming into the lam, but they are above the baseline. Then they come over the meme, and then they connect over. Okay? So that's another thing to watch out for as we move on, because we're only at the beginning, guys. Jim ha meme stacking. Now here we've added a few things. Let's see if we can isolate. Actually, here's one. You saw this word before, and I asked you to look at that letter. Here we've replaced it with an alternate. So not only have we implemented the principle, we've gone beyond that, and we can do this in different ways. So for one word like this, Sayan Fajiru, I haven't calculated all of them, but there are probably about 20 different ways you can typeset this. And ideally, the paragraph builder should have instructions to choose from these ways and then decide which one best suits the paragraph context. Now we have different levels of stretching. And what this is meant to illustrate is not how you would typeset a real document, but basically that the font knows and context knows where it is legal to stretch letters. You can't just stretch anywhere, any old way. So inside of a word, there are certain points at which you can stretch. This example has stretching in it, but it's small, and it's so small that I could actually typeset a full document in it and it actually looks quite good. But let's go to the medium level. And again, you define a font feature. And then you add it. And in this case, the main active feature is JS12. JS00 and up, this is a feature. I hope to register this with the OpenType people. Because what this basically does is says that if you have a justification engine, you can choose this feature to add certain justification features to the paragraph. Microsoft has a JUST feature, or JST, I don't remember exactly how it's spelled, feature already, but in their specification, you do justification before you apply any other features. And the paragraph model that we're using, justification is the last feature that would be applied because it's based on a paragraph analysis as opposed to just being aesthetic spice, so to speak. And here, if we go to that same word, sayan fajiru, watch what we can do here. So here we have three legal stretch points. One, two, three. Normally, you would only use one stretch point in a single word, occasionally two. So one of the things we have to do is teach context that in a case like this, you know, either do the first one, the second one, or the third one, but not to do all three at once. But for the purposes of this document, this illustrates the three legal places in the word that you can stretch. Although technically you would only use one, two, or three. And then here, you can choose level one, two, three of stretching. Here, level one, two, three of stretching. Here, level one, two, three of stretching. You can remove this feature and bring the whole thing flat, and then you can apply stretching to the flat version. So it's actually more like 40 different versions of this word that you can actually make.
Idris?
Yeah.
Is your stretching, how is stretching implemented, I guess? I mean, like, are you adding, is it like?
This is pure glyph substitution.
Glyph substitution, okay.
Ideally, what we would like to do is be able to interpolate these.
Right.
So put all of these stretch substitutions in a table and then extend HZ so that it looks at them and finds, you know, interpolated values in between to squeeze or stretch in different places. So that's a long-term goal. Well, hopefully not too long-term. I shouldn't say that. It's an immediate goal. Because otherwise, it may never happen. And then we have maximal stretching. And let's go back to that same word, sayan fajiru. So here you can really get that word stretched out. And you see the dots and everything are all remain in the correct places and everything is you know, perfectly smooth. I'm not aware of any font system that can do anything quite like this. And here's another quick example. You saw this one before where you go above the baseline and then come down again. So here we have two stretch points there. There are other features as well. If you let's take a look at this word, I'm going to try to go through these quick. So here we have the letter ra. Now each of these is an isolated form. They don't, these two letters don't connect to the left, so that's why all of them are yellow. But watch that middle letter. And so we've implemented a variant, which is a sort of long version of that same letter. If we go to our, that word, sayan fajiru, once again, you can do it at the end as well. And this is the advantage, this gives you the power of killing ligatures. Because once you kill the ligatures, it's much easier to add different variants like this as you go along. So all I had to do was, you know, I didn't, if this had been a ligature right here, this would have been much more onerous to accomplish. But here, all I had to do was just create a segment, replace the original segment with this segment, and then do a G sub, and that's all I had to do. So whenever I see a feature in an old manuscript or something that I want to implement, it usually doesn't take me too long to go into Font Lab, adjust one character to fit that size and then to fit that style and then add it.
You're saying that, I mean, I know nothing about Arabic typography except from proofreading tugboat articles, but
in the that makes you an expert.
Yeah, well, in the ones I've read, I don't know about yours in particular, but in many of the Arabic articles I've read, ligatures are a critical feature of Arabic typography. Like, and I seem to remember you could have ligatures up to seven characters and so on and
that's
so on.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's partly a question of terminology. people assign ligatures to mean the particular rendering
of
a collection of glyphs,
he's doing.
But it doesn't have to be implemented as a single ligature glyph in a font.
Right.
And it's much better not to, as you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you implement it as a... But some people do. I mean, I've read on mailing lists about somebody who had a font of 12,000 characters and implemented all these ligatures. Very macho. Okay. But it's a bit much. So here, so we don't have ligatures, but what we have is you know what I like to call like aesthetic strings.
Uh-huh.
So you can have an aesthetic string of two or three characters.
Uh-huh.
But it can be flexible. So in this particular case, this is an aesthetic string going here like this. It's made out of three characters. But I could replace these two and get a different aesthetic string without having to replace all three. Is this the aesthetic string? Is this three of them? Is it the whole thing? The boundaries start to get not so rigid once you get rid of the hard-coded ligature concept. You know, in India, Pakistan, they like to use this wide letter, wide version of the letter Ya, for example, which is this one, which is just another example. I don't need to dwell on that. But you also get, and I'll leave it as an exercise for you to identify the wide letters here.
Some of them are identifying.
Yeah. So particularly, you know, the calf is very well known and common. Here's a nice little feature here that I didn't emphasize before, which is, if you look here, the two dots originally go here, but the way this word is written, the calf pulls back, and then the two dots go on top of it, although they belong to this particular character, and they're also turned at an angle to where they match the curve here, so these two dots are at a different angle from these two dots. So that's an example of the kind of subtleties that we can add here. This is basically the same, except we've added even more glyph substitutions, because sometimes you want to fill up space. You get an underfull box, as we say in tech, and you want to use one of these wide characters to fill it in. You can fill with justification. So one of the things that we eventually need to do is be able to set penalties and merits and so forth that lean toward using these big glyph substitutions, or which lean toward using stretching. And eventually, if we get this done right, for this single paragraph, you would have virtually an infinite variety of ways to typeset it, just as you can with a normal tech paragraph using penalties and merits. Yes?
Is this algorithm for all of this stretching and typesetting and adjusting going to be written in Lua then?
I'll leave that to Hans to answer. I just give the specs. He does the machinery. So.
So you're doing whatever you do in Lua.
The reason I say this is because, and this came up because of a question on the Lua tech list.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we look at tech as trying to remember the exact word. People were asking about whether this should be hardwired in the engine or not. And so there were some, you know, not quite flame wars, but close to it, over whether X should be hardwired or this should be hardwired. But my understanding is that with Lua, you can have a world, you can have ways to get the best of both worlds where it's not really hardwired, but it's not really hardwired either. So, because Lua gives you that extension layer. So some people were saying, well, why are you doing this in Lua when it should be in the main engine? Well, Lua provides the extension layer so that macro writers don't have to see it, but it is there for those who need to access it.
can easily imagine some other, you know, Arabic expert, Thomas Milo, for example,
yeah,
not agreeing with every one of your aesthetic decisions.
Exactly.
And wanting a different system.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. So that's the question. That's the question: how to define the system of demerits for this? Because it's ultimately it's based on some aesthetics.
Right.
Yeah, but as far as I know, and I'm sure Thomas Milo, if he's not watching now, is going to be watching later. As far as I know, Decotype hasn't handled this particular problem, and this is worth saying something briefly about. Here's a something from the Metaphysics of Avicenna done in the Bulaq font. And I've already told you, you know, how much I like this particular font. And here we have the same or something similar done in Decotype. Now, Decotype implements virtually every aesthetic feature of Ottoman Turkish, of the Ottoman Turkish Nosk tradition. However, from a point of view of paragraph justification, I personally think it's quite horrible, and I would, if I had to read Avicenna's philosophy in this, I mean, I would get a headache very quickly before I got half down the first page. So the shapes are there, although, like I said, I'm not particularly a big fan of this particular style, but things like interword spacing and justification in the paragraph don't seem to be consistent. So for example, like right here, it's very fancy, but again, it seems like, you know, in a macho way, everything is thrown in, but it doesn't look natural. It doesn't look like a natural Arabic paragraph. So all this fancy stuff is there, but in order, here as well, in order for that to work, you have to have some system that makes it natural. And I think this is where tech can play a very positive role with its systems of penalties and demerits, is you can choose various parameters until you find that ideal Arabic paragraph that you want for one purpose or the other. Okay, so that was Milo. And if we go back here, so there are a few others. I mean, here's a hooked ha, which is rarely used, but it's used a lot in handwriting. Here is something that I implemented. Like, for example, I didn't do it here. Haven't got to the point where I can do it yet, although I'm sure it wouldn't be too hard. A lot of times in Qurans, you'll see there's a line between the lines. So the lines are separated by lines, and then, like the letter Jim here, gets chopped so it doesn't cross the line. So that way you can draw a line in between the two lines without any of the letters clashing. And so in some traditions, this is chopped, and so I added that particular feature
five minutes
as well. And we can go through the same thing in black and white if you prefer. But I want to show, now what I've been doing lately is trying to get the vowels in. Here's an example of one. I'm just showing you some experiments. So this is the same word, bahij, done in different ways in this particular system. But I want to show you a little bit with vowels. So here is a good case, and this is the name Muhammad. So here we have a four-character aesthetic string with the vowels placed on. And it's a bit subtle, but this one is contextually moved to the left as opposed to this one. In other words, if you look at this letter, this one is, this shadda goes on top of this. But here it's further to the right, and here it's further to the left. Not only is it further to the left, it's further up as well. So this is an example of contextual positioning of if we don't want to use the full feature, we can go and do something like this. So Muhammad, bi Muhammad, li Muhammadun, bi Muhammadin, li Muhammadin. So I'm in that stage of trying to get all these vowels and so forth done correctly. And here is a good example of contextuality that's very simple. Here's jim. If we add the vowel kasra, we move the dot up and put the vowel there. And you couldn't do this if the dot were hardwired in the font. So one of the things that, you know, that we've done is we've abstracted the dot layer and the vowel layers so that we can control them. There are still a couple of bugs in this mechanism, but it's almost there. There are a couple of bugs in it still there, but we're very close to that. And here is another set of experiments. This can be done in normal fonts, but I'm adding the Quran annotation symbols from Unicode and testing Mark IV, context Mark IV, to make sure that if you type, for an example, one of these symbols followed by three numbers, that it should pop up in the middle automatically. So you can do verse numbering and so forth. And one of the things we're trying to get to, there's still a few bugs in it, but here we have, and I implemented this as marks, so I turned the internal numbers as marks, the Quran annotation symbols as marks, and then you're supposed to be able to apply one and ignore the other in order to get them to combine properly. We're almost out of time. I'd like to just open the floor for questions or comments or suggestions or criticisms or tomatoes or... If anybody has any thoughts, questions, or comments about this. We've come a long way. We still have a bit ways to go, but I'm starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah?
You've mentioned this other person who's an expert who may or may not be watching. Is there a competition for who can put out the best typesetting system in this? Or are there a lot of people waiting for yours, or are there people who wish yours wouldn't happen because they like the other one better? Or?
I don't think there's anything like that going on. I mean, Thomas Milo and I are friends. So his philosophy is a bit different from mine in this respect. I honestly don't think that the Ottoman style of Nas is comfortable for reading long texts. Okay, I mean, maybe when books were handwritten 200 years ago, that might have been appropriate. But in the 21st century, I just haven't seen something done in that particular system that's comfortable to read more than a page or two at a time. It's good for calligraphy, though. And there are plugins. He has a plugin for InDesign where you can use his system to do wonderful Nas calligraphy. Yes. Okay.
Of the words appear, how do you go about that? How do you think about that issue?
Sure, two things. Number one, you can use any text editor that supports multiple languages on the operating system that you use. So if you're on Windows, you just go to regional settings and select Arabic, and you can start typing in Arabic. The problem is when you really want to start working with vowels. And when I was in San Diego, I discussed FC Uniped, which is a wonderful Unicode editor, which gives you a lot of control over the vowels. So the vowels are placed horizontally, not above, so you can select and control them. That's number one. Number two, I don't know if this is ever going to be implemented in LaTeX. So this is purely a context system. And if when it's done, someone wants to port it to LaTeX, that's fine. But since I jump shipped to context, I've never looked back. So this is a purely context-centric project in that sense, although the code is available to everybody if anybody wants to implement the foundations. And Hans talked about LuaTeX and Plain, so the hooks are there to do all the, implement all the features and so forth in another system, whether Plain or LaTeX. Yep.
Well, no, I think we ought to stop. And say thank you.
All right. Well, we're supposed to have question and answer now. On the schedule, it says question and answer.
But it's not your question and answer.
Well, let's just get one more. I want to hear his. Go ahead, just one more.
Can be for Idris.
Okay. Just one more from.
You
I want to hear.
Real converted to context. Can you tell us very briefly why?
I'm sorry.
You are real converted to context. Can you tell us very briefly why?
Sure. And this is the short version. The short version is I was looking to do better critical editions. I wrote Peter Wilson, who did Memoir, and asked him if he would port EdMac to Memoir. He said he wasn't interested. And then Giuseppe, who was proselytizing context on the news group back then, he says, well, I'm sure we can do this in context. And so I wrote Hans. Hans took an interest. I switched the context, and 2 years later, Peter ported EdMac to Memoir anyway, unbeknownst to me. So, the long answer, we can talk about it. All right, thanks.